Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's Breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Raisin Bran? You got to put Raisin Bran up there. Everybody knows it.
It's Mike Shope.
Listen, get your own stupid old dying person team and choose your own cereals.
And the Bulldog.
I shall unleash my fury upon you like the crashing of a thousand waves.
That cereal is soggy. You reach into the fridge for the milk and open the lid on the milk to pour it in there, and that crap is already soggy.
I am untethered and my rage knows no bounds.
That's a problem. That's a problem for a cereal.
A huge problem.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog on WGR Sports Radio 550.
Do we figure Bulldog in his week and a half off is like ranting about cereal at home? Maybe to nobody, or is that just an act? You think that's just for theater, getting super fired up about cereal? I don't know. I think part of what makes him so likable and such an institution, thought about legend, such an institution is his believability in topics and areas like whether, you know, cereal can fire him up, make him angry. Brad knows Bulldog well. Brad Ryder here on the Wester Hotline. It's been a while, but I'm so happy to talk to you again. I was so happy to get your text that I've been gushing about here for the last half an hour and using on sale, so to speak. Brad, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Good to talk to you. How are things?
Okay. I'm hanging on.
Right.
I'm not going to the Bahamas tomorrow.
No, I'm pretty excited about that. Is there a difference between a Hawaiian shirt and a Bahamian shirt?
I mean, you're going to find out.
Tropical.
They're really far away from each other.
Yeah, but it seems like the same general vibe. I own one, what I would call Hawaiian shirt. It's covered in flamingos and palm trees and things. And then I got a Tommy Bahama, the actual brand name shirt, as a gift for Christmas because of this trip. I've got those two, and then I've got another one that's kind of similar, but no real pattern on it. And that's really all I've got packed so far, is three shirts. I'm going to have to do a little bit more work before we get on that plane tomorrow, but yeah, I'm excited, man.
But you're going to want to shop down there anyway.
Probably.
Yeah.
I don't know how it works. Have you been to the Bahamas, Mike?
Once. But
it's crazy.
It was a resort, and that's probably not really the Bahamas. You know, like, don't you have friends? I got a buddy who's going to Mexico next week. Like, you're not going to Mexico. You're going to Cancun. You're going to an American resort that's in Mexico. Like, that's not going to Mexico.
Right. Well, that's the thing with this, because we went on this trip 5 years ago. This is the second time the Bulls have played in this game. And you land in the airport and everything's fine. And then you get on a bus, we have a group of four or five buses that will take us. And then it's an hour drive or something through like abject poverty, and it's like I'm glad someone else is driving, skinny little streets and just craziness that you've never seen, very third world looking. And then you cross a bridge and they call it paradise, and it looks like paradise, but it's a little bit depressing on the way in and the way out. But I'm looking forward to the football game nonetheless.
Well, one question I had for you has been answered, and that is that the Bahamas Bowl is in the Bahamas.
It wasn't this year.
No, it was in Ashland, Massachusetts last year. Everybody knows that. But this year,
Charlotte. They were remodeling the Edward Robinson Stadium. So I'm expecting a spectacular. Not really. It won't be much of anything. But they did something, and it was shut down last year. But it's back, and we're there.
So I thought that was funny, but it wasn't funny because it actually was not in the Bahamas last year.
Really? Yeah.
I should have said 2 years ago. That might have been funny.
Yeah, that would have been hilarious.
Yes. If I may, the 1 year I worked on a college football broadcast was the 2000 season for Syracuse.
Okay.
And, I mean, we grew up, Syracuse was always good or great. They were always in the Sugar Bowl the 1 year with tie-dye, and like they were always going to bowl games. So That might have been the first thing I thought about is like, oh, wow, I've never been to a bowl game. That's going to be like real travel. I didn't grow up going places. Right. So this is going to be cool. And as I got to the last game of the season, which I did play-by-play for because Dave Pasch was in Alaska for a basketball tournament. It was against Rutgers. And they needed to win, I think, to become bowl eligible. And they did. And it was going to be between the Music City Bowl in Nashville. And I've still never been there. So you know it wasn't that.
Yeah.
And the Aloha Bowl in Honolulu.
Whoa.
So this is exciting. This is like the maybe the last time I just was like geeked for the bowl game announcements and who's going where. I get to find out, am I going to Nashville or am I going to Honolulu with the Orange? And it turned out they did not get picked.
Oh, I thought you were wound up in, you know, Alabama like we always do.
Would have taken it.
Yeah. So I've been doing these games since 2008. And the first year that I did the games is the only year UB has won a MAC championship. And we got to go to a bowl game. It was the first time they were going. They had been invited in 1958 to the Tangerine Bowl, but they had a couple black guys on the team that weren't allowed to stay in the same hotel. The team rejected it out of hand. And it became a great story 50 years later when they finally got to play in a bowl game. Where do they go for a bowl game?
Toronto,
yeah. So, I mean, it was cool, but that's not really what I'm picturing is a bus across the Peace Bridge for my bowl game. But since then, we've been to Boise, Idaho, which was great. We've been to the Bahamas, which was great. We've been to Mobile, Alabama for Dollar General Bowl. That was cool. And what am I forgetting? Oh, they've been to the Camellia Bowl in Montgomery, Alabama twice in the last 5 years, but I haven't gone on either one of them because once it was COVID, so it was limited travel. And then the other time, they were taking two planes. There's the like plane that goes for 5 days, and then the one for people who have jobs that are just going for the game that go for, you know, day before and leave right after the game. And I was on that plane, and we had a blizzard, and we couldn't travel. So we had, like, some South Alabama broadcasters just did our jobs for us while we sat home and watched on television. So I'm excited. It's the first bowl trip in 5 years, and it's right back to the Bahamas.
And that second of those two Montgomery bowls was actually played in the Bahamas. No,
right.
Just trying to recover, still trying to recover. Brad Ryder on the West Her Hotline. Before we get into your stuff here, why you and I are talking today, just how are you enjoying, doesn't seem like really much of a word here, but this Bills existence the last 5 years, you know, for so many years we were together and it was the drought. And
yeah.
But, I mean, before that in the '90s was pretty good, but this is a different job when the Bills are like this.
I don't even know what it is. I don't know if I would be good at it. I think about that all the time. People ask me if I miss the day-to-day radio thing, and the answer is almost always no. But when I'm watching the things that I'm watching, when I'm watching new weird records being broken, like you can take any statistic surrounding this quarterback and come up with a new thing that he just accomplished that nobody's ever done before. It seems like every week. You know, I went to the Niners game and I took my 10-year-old son to the Niners game. He had been asking all year to go to either the Chiefs or Niners game. Like 2 days before, I said, why not? And bought a pair of tickets and took him and sat in the snow. And that play where he scores, you know, he throws it and Cooper pitches it to him and he dives in. It turned to him immediately, and because I want him to appreciate it. I said, Nate, that play that just happened in however many years when he gets inducted into the Hall of Fame, because that's happening. That is a Hall of Fame player right there. That's one of the plays they're going to show on the highlight reel, and you were here. You begged to come. You sat in the snow. You trudged through 2 miles of it to get here, and you're sitting here, and that is what you're going to see when you're older and he's in the Hall of Fame. And I ended up finding a canvas picture of that the day, like 2 days before Christmas, and gave it to him. It's his favorite thing. The kid got a TV for Christmas. His favorite thing, he got catcher's gear for Christmas. His favorite thing is a picture of Josh Allen diving for the pylon in the snow with the Niners behind him, knowing full well that he was there in attendance for it. So I'm seeing it differently, obviously. Now the father of three boys, two of whom are super psycho sports fans. I'm just making sure they appreciate what they're getting, because the good old days are right now. We talk about the 90s like that was the thing, and it was amazing, but this team has not yet failed to win the Super Bowl completely, if you know what I'm saying. I think we're in the good stuff. That was the precursor. This is the good stuff, and I'm making sure that everybody who will listen to me understands that as much as possible, because I mean, I think about when I had season tickets, and it was all during the drought. I probably had them for 6 years, 7 years, something like that. The thing that made me give them up was the disappointment at the end. The tailgate party was always great. In-game was always great. And right around the time that I bailed, it felt like they would win until the last minute, and then they would lose, and then we would, all of the 70,000 of us that were hanging out together and partying together and sharing in this, you know, spectacular event that only happens in 16 cities a week, and we loved it, but then they would lose on a last-second kick by Nick Folk, or they would lose on whoever maybe it was Jason Elam, I don't even know, Broncos the same year,
yeah.
Where they led the whole time or never trailed, and then when the clock read zero, they lost, and then you trudge to the parking lot, and then fight with people to get out of the parking lot, we're not friends anymore, and now I'm just stuck out in Orchard Park for 2 hours mad at what I just did. And then I think about season ticket holders who just ended watching 8 consecutive wins at home. That's what you sign up for. That's why you pay that money. That's why you spend all day there. That's why you buy all the shirts and, you know, jump through the tables if that's your thing. And, you know, the grilling, all of it is because of the feeling at the end of it. And the experience of being a season ticket holder right now and watching 8 wins and knowing that as long as this guy's your quarterback, it doesn't matter what happens in the offseason. You've got a chance that this is going to be the year. And that's something, you know, we used to try to talk ourselves into, this is going to be the year that they break the drought and that they get into the playoffs. It wasn't about Super Bowl. It was like, you know, I don't know. They've been close to beating the Patriots. Maybe this is the year they can beat them at home and split with them and then get a wild card and then get lucky and don't draw them in the playoffs. And maybe it was all that. Now it's just like, all right, who's next? I'm listening to you talk about, would you rather play Denver? Would you rather play Miami? I don't care. I don't care. I want to see it. I want to see it unfold. And the beauty of it is, after watching all the crap that we've watched and being the age that I am, I don't think I'm going to be destroyed if they don't win the Super Bowl. I'm going to be destroyed when Josh Allen retires without a Super Bowl. But until then, I'm planning on them winning one, and I'm going to keep watching until it happens. So, yeah, it's a whole different feeling, a whole different vibe. I don't know what you walk in and talk about on a daily basis when everything's so happy. You know, I think about back when GR first started as a sports station, and we would get criticized as a group for being so negative all the time. It's like, well, you haven't made the playoffs since we were a sports station. And you did that for 17 years or 6, whatever it was. So I've noticed a turn in GR. It seems like you guys are a little bit more positive now, Mike. And I'm proud of you guys for evolving in that way.
For paying attention.
Yeah.
At all. Trying to be normal and real about the situation.
Yeah,
yes. Well, you gotta have your eyes open. The age that you are, I appreciate you making it to my tier finally recently.
Yeah, here we are. I'm 50.
you made it. I celebrate Brad's birthday every year, but usually without Brad. Nothing personal.
We've done it together on occasion.
It's happened. That's the night I met my wife, was our birthday, 2002. So,
one of my favorite stories.
Yes. I could talk about this for much longer, but I want to make sure you get to where you wanted to be here. So
sure.
You sent me a text about 4 old Bills playoff games with a specific thought in mind. What was it, and what have you thought about?
All right, well, here's the first thing is, I asked my wife and she agrees. I think the algorithms on YouTube are just fantastic because they have determined at some point last week, YouTube was like, you know, we've been watching what you're watching, and I think what you're looking for is old Bills games. You seem old. You seem to like football. How about this 18-minute package of, you know, Bills-Bengals 1988 AFC Championship game? How about this 22-minute package of the Raiders game, of the Chiefs AFC Championship game, whatever it is? And I am a sucker for it. When would I ever turn down 18 minutes of that? So I've been watching a couple of those a night now for, I don't know, 4 or 5 nights. But the first or second night that it happened, I was watching a game, and you're much better at this sort of thing than I am, so you're the person I thought of. When I watch Bills games right now, I've got 3 kids and a wife and had a dog. You can't hear it. Like, I don't hear what the announcers are saying very well. If I rewind, I can listen, but I'm not in on that level. I'm mostly just watching with my eyes. But sitting in the basement by myself at night watching the 51-3 Bills Raiders game, I couldn't help but notice how incredible the color guy was. And I couldn't place the voice. And at some point, I heard him referred to as Bill. I eventually had to look it up to find out that it was Bill Walsh, the legend, who reminded me or kind of showed me. I think we should be doing more with coaches as color guys than we should with ex players as color guys. They're in such a hurry to throw jam Tom Brady down your throat. And I like Greg Olsen; he's been great, and Romo gets a lot of hype and all that stuff. But hearing a guy who has made his living diagnosing football, talking about it, explaining it to other people, as opposed to somebody who's been playing it, I think is a better way to do it. And if I ran a network, I think I would start trying to head in that direction. But the way that I reached out to you is I said, hey, Mike, you're the only human being I know who might have an answer to this question. What's the best performance ever by a color guy in a Bills playoff game in our lifetime? And within, first you said, ooh, I like this. Mm-hmm. And then within about 3 minutes, the first name you mentioned was Bill Walsh, which was incredible to me. So that blew my mind, but it told me I was texting the right guy with the question.
It wasn't like anything I'd ever thought of either. Yeah. Like I started to itemize the games, and I couldn't quote really anybody from them. I did it by who are the guys I think I like the most? And then is there a Bills example, right? Because there were certain of these announcers that I would never pick, but maybe they were amazing on those given days.
Sure. Yeah, I asked you because I knew you would, or I hoped, anyway, that you would be like that. That you would say, ooh, this is a challenge. Let me think about this. And you've got enough archived in your brain to sift through to try to come up with an answer. Because if you threw that question at me, I would say, I don't know. I thought it was funny when Paul McGuire put on the big Mark Kelso helmet coming back from a break once. Yep. But that wasn't a playoff game. I remember little moments like that. Mm-hmm. I didn't remember how excellent Bill Walsh was at explaining to me. I mean, they're in the first drive, maybe the second drive, and he's already explaining how the Raiders, because of the speed of the offense, they're calling, not only is it the same personnel, they're calling the same play. They can't catch their breath enough to change a play. And eventually they call a famous, basketball-type timeout to sort of, all right, hold on, let me catch my breath. And then they come out and they run the same play again, and Bill Walsh is like, they're dead. They're dead in this game. Nothing's going to change. And I'm, paraphrasing a little bit, but the basic concept was, well, I'm watching a brilliant football mind assess a football game where my team is doing well, and man, is it more entertaining to hear it coming from him rather than just me saying, ooh, this is great.
I want to say quickly, your point about coaches not really being in the booth, I think the money has changed that. I mean, Bill Cowher and Jimmy Johnson for years have been satisfied just sort of laughing at dumb jokes in studios and really saying nothing. And, doing this, here's what just happened in Pittsburgh updates, like just meaningless stuff. And that's always, it used to shock me that type A coach minds would ever sort of like enjoy that or settle for that, if you will. So the money, I don't know what Walsh made. He was still a relatively young guy and he didn't do it for long. It might've been 2 years, 2 or 3 years he was in the booth. Or I think three, that's it. And whether it's the travel, the grind of it, and he was a guy that had reached a status that he didn't have to worry about what he said. Like Johnny Miller in golf did not care what you thought, which is what made him great. And I think when Romo showed up, he was like that, and now he isn't. He just sort of, I'm not going to worry about what I'm not supposed to tell you, or like I can predict this play here. I'm not afraid to be critical. And now just like everybody's getting fat and nobody really wants to risk anything. Generally.
I think all of that is correct, but I would also say that keep in mind, I was watching a highlight thing. I didn't know it was Bill Walsh. All I knew was this guy's good. So it wasn't necessarily, oh, this is a future Hall of Fame coach. This is a Super Bowl winning coach. So I need to listen to what he has to say. Mm-hmm. There are other guys who you've never heard of or never thought to utilize. I mean, since texting with you about this, I thought about Chuck Dickerson and the perspective that Chuck brought to football on the radio and how much different that was from most former players. There's just a different vibe when you've been soaking in the X's and O's of it, and then they just kind of fall out of you rather than being, you feeling the need to force them on the audience. It's just like, this is what watching a football game with this guy would feel like. Mm-hmm. Now, Chuck wasn't a color guy, but he was a colorful radio analyst. And we see that all over the place with, big personalities becoming a thing. But this was just straight up, here's a guy who comes across as friendly in Bill Walsh, comes across as friendly and also super knowledgeable, and he's presenting it to me in a way that's not pushy or anything. He's just telling me what he sees. And I think that exists without it having to be Bill Cowher or whoever, you know, Jimmy Johnson, a Super Bowl winning. I don't think you have to win the Super Bowl to be able to talk football like that. I've talked football with college coaches. Pete Lembo at UB right now, you'd have a blast talking football with him because he's just a regular guy who's going to tell you everything he's observing.
But it probably would have to be off the air.
Right, yeah, he's busy.
No, well, that too, but you still there's still a guard that goes up.
Oh, yeah.
Right, I can't have the same conversation. Right. I've had a couple of conversations with Sean McDermott that were really good, but they were off the air. We've had good ones on the air, too, and then we had one off the air that was bad. But, you know, just in general, obviously, they're going to tell you more. Walsh is one of four former coaches to be a color guy for a Bills playoff game. And I believe they're all in the Hall of Fame. Walsh did three Bills playoff games with Dick Enberg. And the others are John Madden, Bill Parcells, and Dick Vermeil.
Vermeil?
Yep, Vermeil.
Yeah.
Tyndale.
Makes sense.
I should have let you guess.
I wouldn't have. I just wanted to guess Vermeil, and I said it just under the buzzer or at the same time as you. So I got that one in.
The person that has been the color commentator for more Bills games in the playoffs than anyone else, and it's by three, is?
Wow.
It is kind of a wow.
It would have to be. It probably would have to be recent. It might be Romo at this point.
Tony Romo has called seven Bills playoff games. No one else more than four as a color commentator. Nance and Romo have done seven. That is kind of a wow that it's already seven and it's going to go up here pretty soon. Dick Enberg called 10 Bills playoff games play by play. Nance and Romo together have done seven, and Marv Albert called five.
I've got a great thing going here when Nance and Romo are on because my wife just loves Jim Nance for some reason. I don't know what it is. He's just pleasant. It's the golf voice. It's the master's voice. Mm-hmm. He's pleasant to be around. So, like, last week, I was shocked to turn on the TV and run it. Bills Jets week 17 to turn on, or this past week, to turn on and get Nance and Romo. And I didn't feel like we deserved them, but I'm very happy with that. I know Romo has gotten away from what everybody liked about. I'm just really comfortable with those guys being in my living room, so that's my favorite. And I'm happy to hear that. And I'd like to see them a couple more times this year.
The only thing I'm generally a Nance fan too. The only thing that I hear that bothers me when he does a Bills game is that it's clear. He gets all his information about the Bills from either the Bills or somebody that just is not objective about them. Like the one year where he just got hot complaining about a straw man, making a straw man argument about the Super Bowl window being closed. Like, who are you really arguing with? Like, what is the point? Who could say that? It's like the only time I've ever heard Jim Nance get upset is when he's defending the Bills on something in an argument that almost doesn't exist.
Yeah,
this happened again last week too. Like, you know, if you want to try to make a point about what the fan base is saying, listen to the fans next time. That's all.
Yeah,
I like him too. I like him too.
I think I might even like that part of it too.
Okay,
because you know, like the vibe you get from college football broadcasts. You turn on just a college football in the South. And it's all the wee stuff. And I know this is a national broadcast and that's different, but there's a comfort that comes from it. And comfort was the word I think I led with when talking about having them in my living room for these games. So maybe that's part of it. Like, I feel like he's with me. I don't need him rah-rah rooting for the Bills. But if he were to make that argument that the window's not closed, I'd be like, yeah, that's right, Jim. It's not closed.
Yeah.
And I have heard people say it. Not a lot. And they've been wrong. But just, I'm glad you're bringing this to my attention.
It's fine. It's fine. It's easy to like. It's just cheap. You know, like, just... Make it a real argument. That's all. But, you know, Brad, I don't want to end on conflict. It's New Year's Eve.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do you believe the Bills will be the first team with regular season wins over two 15-win teams?
Probably. How could it be possible before?
Right. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. If Detroit wins?
Cool. Yeah.
I would think so.
Sorry about that. And then here's my other question. This is a throwbacky thing. Do you remember the song that existed before the Bills adopted the shout song.
No.
Now, there was a time period when it went away, and then people complained, and they brought it back.
Mm-hmm.
But before it existed, I still think of this song every now and then, because when I was watching that Raiders game, I was thinking how, while we pride ourselves on being this great fan base, I can't imagine there being anything more annoying in the world than losing a playoff game 51-3 and hearing the shout song every time the other team scores. And we've been doing that since the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's got to be the most irritating thing in sports.
Do you know the answer?
I do, yeah, because I think of this song often, and I remember it being written out on the back of like the program that you would get when you would go to the game. It was like a cha-cha type of thing. And I decided that I am going to sing it to you because it's.
Did you?
It goes like, here it goes. It went like this. It went, "We can make it happen."
Oh, yeah.
"Cheering on the Bills now. Buffalo, make it happen. Climb on the Bills fan wagon. I do believe in Buffalo. I do believe in Buffalo. I do, I do, I do, I do. We can. We can make it happen. Cheering on the Bills now." Anything?
Oh, yeah, I know it. I didn't remember that was okay. What predated the shout song, but I know it. It was excellent. It's better than I remember it, hearing you sing it.
It was kind of great.
It was kind of great. Blast it through the Bahamas tomorrow. Open the windows on the bus and just blast that song.
I can't find it.
Well, you'd have to sing it yourself then, apparently.
I can do that.
Paul next. Brad, thank you. Happy New Year.
Thanks, Mike. Same to you.
Have a nice trip. Brad Ryder. Former WGR host, he's going with UB to the Bahamas Bowl. The game is Saturday morning in the Bahamas. How about that? Coincidence. Paul Hamilton next, Ross Tucker at 5. Happy New Year. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, it's the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Well, we won't ask Paul Hamilton that question. We know not to do that. But we do like to talk about games that have already happened. And this last one I missed because I was sitting here with you talking about the Bills game that was finishing up, Bills and the Jets, when the Sabres were winning in St. Louis 4-2 on Sunday afternoon, their third straight. I did catch a lot of the Chicago game last Friday night, which was a romp. And this game, Paul, Happy New Year, first of all, by the way, Paul.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you. This game read like the Sabres were kind of badly outplayed. Is that an overstatement?
Yeah, in certain parts of the game, they were. There's definitely, you know how Lindy Ruff says all the time, they have to find a way with your B game. That's what good teams do. You don't always have your A game, and they definitely were on their B game. And they definitely needed their goaltender. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen stole them a game, 35 saves on 37 shots. They had averaged only 21 shots against in the three games before that. St. Louis at 15 in the first period.
Chicago took a long time to get its first.
Yeah.
Last week.
So it was a lot different the way they were playing. But it was Luukkonen number one. And number two, they badly beat St. Louis in the special teams battle, which they don't often win either. And, you know, first the power play. They came up the ice fast a couple of times, entered the zone fast. That's how Tage Thompson scored in the middle of the ice. Who better than, you know, when you're entering the zone fast and backing off the D to have coming down the middle and Tage Thompson. And then they gained the zone. And, Quinn finds Zucker in front for a power play goal. So you score the two power play goals. They had the penalty problem again, Mike. They had four penalties. They gave up four power plays in the first 31 minutes of the game. But Luukkonen stood his ground. You know how they say sometimes your goalie has to be your best penalty killer? He was. They showed desperation. They blocked a lot of shots while they were killing penalties. And St. Louis went 0-for-4 on the power play. So that's why they won the game, getting great goaltending and winning the special teams battle. But defensively, no, it wasn't as good as it had been the three games before that.
I think it might have been last Monday before the Islanders game. One of the games last week, Ruff was talking about, before a game, he was talking about, you know, changing things up on the power play. And he cut a reporter off who was talking about getting the puck back to the point. He's like, don't even do that. He said something like, just come off the walls, try to create chaos. This is not an exact quote. But do you remember what?
Close.
Okay, are we seeing that? Like, is that working? Is that how this is improving here with these two goals on Sunday, for example?
the second goal after they gained the zone and backed the Blues off with speed, Quinn was on the wall, the left wing wall. And he found Zucker in the middle, and Zucker was fairly open and whipped it home. So, yes, they did do that, and they do have power play goals in three of their last four games, going 4-for-10. So it has gotten a little bit better for them, and their penalty killing in the last three is 6-for-6. That's what we were talking about when they won 7-of-9. They had the best penalty kill in those nine games, and they were fourth on the power play. And since then, it all went tumbling down where their special teams were not good, and they went 13 games without a win. And now their special teams are better. They've won three in a row for the fourth time this year. Fourth time they're going to go for four in a row. Have been unsuccessful in the first three.
Uh-oh. That'll be tonight in Dallas. It's, you know, it's going to take a while, Paul, before this kind of thing shows in the standings, as you know, and it hasn't really shown yet. 45 games left. They might need to win 30. Like, do they have the kind of team that is capable of something like that?
Well, Joe did the math, and he said they basically have to go on a points percentage of 667 to get to 90. I think he said 92.
Yeah.
So that's a tall ask for this team that hasn't won four in a row since January of 2023. That was, by the way, was a five-game winning streak, but that's the last time they also won four. So they haven't done it in 2 years. If they're going to be on a 667 pace, they're probably going to have to win 7-10 games in a row. Good teams do that, by the way. I mean, it's not like that's never done. It's actually done a lot, but not by this team. So, it, you know, we have not seen that consistency from this team to be able to pull off something like that in so long, especially with this group, yeah, it's, you know, they've won three in a row and they're still in last place in the Eastern Conference.
For whatever reason, was it 2 years ago, Paul, two or three, when the Sabres just like won all their games at Western Conference teams? Mm-hmm. And I've got them at, what, 5-0 this year after the win in St. Louis? They won in Chicago early, L.A., Anaheim, San Jose, and then St. Louis. That's their only five road games out west, and here come three more. This week, Dallas, Colorado, and Vegas. I mean, I'm not the type to associate things over seasons like this. Maybe it's a coincidence, or maybe there's something about getting away that relaxes them and brings out their best.
Yeah, and they, even at home, you know, they had those two losses to the Los Angeles Kings and the Minnesota Wild, but they badly outplayed both those teams and ran into a hot goaltender. They've beaten Dallas at home, St. Louis at home. Vancouver was an overtime loss at home, so they did get a point out of that. Colorado, we all know what happened there. And Winnipeg was an overtime loss, and they lost to Utah. So it's gone on at home, it hasn't gone as well as it did in the beginning. But, yes, on the road, it seems like they've done very well. And I don't remember if it was last year or the year before, they played a very good game in Dallas and won. And I just don't remember if it was last mm-hmm. year or the year before.
It was two seasons ago that I'm thinking of where they just, like, would – their record was insanely good. For a team that misses the playoffs, they went, like, 10-2-1 or something. I'm not going to count them all here, but it was two seasons ago, the year they just missed. What should we expect tonight? What's the latest with injuries and the lineup, as far as you know?
Well, you know, listening to Lindy Ruff this morning with Jeremy and Joe – Darlene has, you know, said, I feel great type of thing, but, you know, Ruff says otherwise. It's not that he's bad or regressed, but there's still a little bit there, which is why they gave him yesterday off from practice. Not that he's going to miss the game, not that it's anywhere near as bad as it was, but Darlene kind of made it sound like it's gone, and it's not. So, you know, he did say Darlene's going to be dealing with things, as is the way he put it. When he talked about it, but it sounds like he's fine because he's been playing at a high level since he's been back from injury. He's been playing very well,
mm-hmm.
and that's why he got the second star of the week yesterday, I think that was, because he's playing so well. So it's just now managing it. It's good, but he managed to keep it where it is and make sure it doesn't get any worse. Of course, Greenway really is their only injury. He's the long-term injury, and everybody else is fine. They had Obey Cabell sick, and so he didn't play the last game.
Winter Classic in about half an hour. It always looks good, you know. It's not new anymore. Now it's tucked in on a Tuesday afternoon, not even the holiday. Okay, but it always looks good. And if you get nostalgic about the old ballparks and stadiums where they've hosted most of these winter classics, today looks like it would probably feel good.
I can't tell you how much I enjoyed, and I was freezing in some of them, but I've done four of them. And especially doing the very first one here in the stadium. And it was like, that's fine, the Sabres lost, but, you know, being down at the glass, there was only one goal by the Sabres. And I wanted to hear that noise come down from the stands, you know. And yeah, I felt bad for the fans that they only got to cheer for one goal and then one shootout goal. It's like, if you're going to lose 5-4, where you got to cheer for some goals. And but the ice was just so bad. They learned a lot from the ice in that one. And then, of course, I did the one at Citi Field in New York where the wind chill, my teeth were chattering by the third period, but I still enjoyed it. It's still one of my favorite things that I've done in my career is doing those. Of course, the one up in Hamilton. So it's just been so much fun to be a part of them. I said four. I guess I've only done three. I've really enjoyed it and would look forward. Well, Gary Bettman's already said there'll be another one here once there's a new stadium.
Which is in 2 years at the soonest anyway. One goal in that premier edition of the Winter Classic and my wife missed it. So it wasn't back from the bathroom in time to start the second period.
Oh, you're kidding.
To see Brian Campbell tie the game.
What was it like to be in the stands? Was it really
It was wonderful.
Cold?
No, it wasn't. I don't remember it being cold. I just remember being in love with it. Mm-hmm. And Bulldog and I went across all the way around to do the post-game show from the booth, and that was just surreal. I think he's also said, I've said it, that it was my favorite day ever in there.
No, me too.
You know,
I just loved doing it.
It was important. It felt important, special. Buffalo was special. The weather was perfect for, you know, who we are and what they wanted that day to look like, I think. And, you know, they lost, but still a great day. All right, that's coming up. Blues and Blackhawks from Wrigley. Sabres and Stars from Dallas at 8. The Steve Foley Law pregame show. Paul and Brian, I assume, tonight.
Yep.
I'll be long gone by then, Paul. Yeah, I couldn't. 7 o'clock. Come on. you'll do a great job. Thanks for your time today. Happy New Year once again.
Happy New Year. Take care.
Ross Tucker coming up at 5. That's always great. I want to say one more thing about Paul, but I want to make sure that I worded correctly. You know, you don't want to have an opportunity like this go by and just not do a good job. Paul Hamilton's appearance on WJR brought to you by Equitable Advisors. Planning for your future is about more than just money. Let Equitable be your guide. And by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. Happy New Year to you. I'm Mike Shope. Ross Tucker in less than 20 minutes. This is WGR. Welcome back. Happy New Year. I'm Mike Shope. Bulldog returns on Thursday. Ross Tucker scheduled to join me in about 12 minutes. Although he did just tweet a picture of himself holding up a beer at a beach. I was told Ross would be ready for us, and he almost always has been, if not always. I have been planning to go to this Bills game in New England for a couple of months. Never bought a ticket. There were as many as a dozen of us going at one point. Looked at tickets. Some of the people in the group wanted to go nice because it's sort of a rare trip. Others didn't love the idea of spending $300. A couple of friends and I just sort of thought, let's just wait. Because by the time we get to week 18, maybe there'll be a lot of pretty readily available seats. So that naturally, I mean, not surprisingly, has been the case for this game. But one by one, my guys just bailed on the idea to the point where there were a couple of us left. And you know what? I've got family there. Maybe it ends up being more of a family trip. And then I just got to a point where let's just not bother. It's down and back, not going to be on vacation or anything like that. It's supposed to be cold. Why wouldn't it be cold? Trubisky, no offense, buddy, but my son would say, or I'm misusing the term, but this game just lost all its drip. Just meaningless game against a Patriots team that might prefer to lose it as they sit in position for the number one overall pick. The Bills are a 3-point road favorite. in this game at New England. Didn't they just beat New England by 3 points with their guys at home? But interesting, like the Denver game, Denver has a lot to play for, but they're a 10-point favorite. Now it's 11. Oof. 11-point favorite against Kansas City. That's late Sunday. I don't know. So not that you needed to know, but I'm not going to New England. This could be an absolutely horrendous weekend in the NFL. Maybe Minnesota-Detroit will save it on Sunday night. That's a big one. But up to five teams in playoff spots that may just not bother: Buffalo, Kansas City, Philadelphia, the Rams now. Even though the Rams could slide down a seed, they're talking about resting Stafford and their guys. They'd prefer to do that. And also, you could have the Steelers doing this. You could have Houston. And none of these teams is playing each other. So there's six games. Then I've got all the bad teams. I've got, what, nine teams in the NFL that have 12 or 13 losses, I think it is. And not a lot of matchups, if any, between those teams. I've got almost half the schedule being games where really there's just not that much to do here. Detroit, Minnesota, Sunday night. We'll see what happens Saturday with the AFC North, but it could be just a disaster in terms of, you know, drama and competition with the playoffs in mind of a Week 18. Ross Tucker next. We'll talk about the merits of, if he's with me, I hope he is, I think he will be, the rest and other facets here of the strategy going into the final week of the regular season. Happy New Year once again. I'm Mike Shope, and this is WGR.